This is the second tape of an interview with Eva Burns done by Josie Fisher on February 10th, 1981. Mrs. Burns' residence is 406 Achille Road, Havertown, Pennsylvania. Could you continue telling me about that, those early days?
Yes, we were arrested. We stayed there 6 weeks, and after 6 weeks, we were told to stand in rows of five, and that's when the selection took place. They pulled some of us, we had been tattooed, I forgot to say that, on our arms.
When did that happen?
Shortly after we got there, maybe the next day or two. And we were pulled by our arms, and the tattoo number was taken down and put to one side, and other people were put to the other side. And then we were told we were going to go somewhere else. We didn't know what for first, but we were going to go to labor camp. That's all we chose. And again, we went into cattle cars, and then in the labor camp, we were very much surprised when we got out, because it was the middle of the forest. It was nice barracks, painted all kinds of colors, blue, green, and yellow, and red. There's numbers on the barracks. And it seemed apparent that it would be, this would be a certainly better place than Auschwitz.
How far away do you think you were from?
I had no idea how long we rode. But it couldn't have been too terribly far. It was in Upper Silesia, and the camp was called Christianstadt. I guess the city of Christian. And there we had women, SS women, guarding us, and they were very cruel and very bad. We worked in ammunition factory, in an ammunition factory. We walked one hour there and 1 hour back. And they're different shifts, morning shift, afternoon shift, or night shift, but they switched us. And we were cleaning grenades. It was a grenade factory. Hand grenades. And some, we met some foreign workers there who were there was some sabotage going on. Some people, some of the foreign workers, some of our girls, if nobody looked to, would put holes into the grenades, kind of. They were supposed to clean them, kind of like it. Did something to it, the sabotage. Of course, you had to be very careful not to be caught. So it wasn't easy to do that.
Was anybody caught that you know?
No, not that I know. And it was just a satisfaction that you sabotage. And things were quite bad then. We didn't get enough to eat. It was not as bad as Auschwitz, but much worse than Eisenstadt. And we worked and we slept on carts, like bunk beds, two or three in a row, I think two. And it was not enough and bad, and some of the girls wouldn't perform, falling asleep and on the job and so forth. The foreman was very upset, and he kept saying, "What in the world are you doing? Why can't you perform properly?" So one of the girls said, "Well, we don't get enough food, and we have to work. When we come home, they give us chores to do. We can't rest, and we don't get enough sleep." So he says, "Well, I will intervene to be sure that you have enough, that you have enough food, and food gets better." But I don't know whether he did or not, but nothing ever got better. And the women treated us very badly, very cruelly.
You were guarded on this walk By the female SS?
Yes, yes.
And the walk went through the town?
I don't know if it was SS officers or they had men.
I forgot that already.
And I don't know if anybody who was in the camp who, you know, who I could check with. When we came into camp, things were still the same that they were. But they didn't have, they broke up with one of the soldiers or something, or SS men, they let it out on us. They were very cruel. The women in their 20s, the woman in charge was about 24, 25 years old.
What did they do when they let it out?
Well, they would call the roll call, which they had to do. That was ordered to them. But, you know, people were sick and they couldn't care less. And they asked them, could that sick person, please can you bring that sick girl in? Into the barrack, into her bunk. And oh no, we have to stand outside in cold weather and 103 feet four temperature. It would drop.
How long were those roll calls?
They made them pretty long. Too long for some people. When you were sick, when you were well, it was just that you were cold. But things were bad there. And finally, in February 45, the beginning of February 45, seems like the Russians were after us. And so we were told, the commandant, who was a man, said, women get all these things together and leave. We're going to leave. We're going to walk. The Russians are behind us. We have to get away from them.
The camp that you were in was not technically part of Auschwitz.
No.
It was a separate camp.
It was a work labor camp.
And it had both men and women?
No, just women.
Just women.
But I'm talking about guards. So
there were both male and female guards.
Yes. And so we marched. And
did you have any idea where you were going?
No, we had no idea. We knew that we had to get away. The commandant said, now there's some 900 odd people of you women here. And how many there will be at the end, it's not my responsibility, I'm just supposed to bring you. So some were shot, some were, you know, may have taken off.
Some were shot when?
On this walk, because they couldn't walk anymore. Some may have tried to run away and were shot, and others got away.
How were you dressed for this march?
We had, it was winter, so we had winter coats, civilian.
Civilian.
Yes, and we had a little square striped piece in our winter coat.
Where was that?
On the back of the coat.
And how was that sewn on top?
That was sewn, it had been sewn, a hole had been made, a square hole had been made into the coat, and it was sewn into the coat. But we had, most of us, remember that? Most of us had, for some reason, we had scissors and a needle and thread. So what we did is we took that piece off while we were still in camp, so a few months before that. And we put a piece of material of our coat underneath it, and then we sewed the striped piece back on.
Why did you do that?
We don't really know. Somebody said the idea, and when we had a little free time, we all did it. We figured, I don't know, that would give, must have been something behind it that you would maybe want to run away or something.
Did you know?
But we just like see monkey do monkey, just copied each other, somebody's idea, and we all did it. We most of us had enough material to take out of the coat, cut a piece out of the ham or whatever, because some of the coats were, had big hams because from a taller person, and so we did that. And as we marched, my girlfriend and I were talking. She actually started it, and she said, Eva, what do you say? Do you want to go through this? We saw girls shot, and so girls stayed in a barn once, and there wasn't enough room, and we stayed outside of the barn under a wagon. And we talked all night, and she said, whispered, that maybe we should try to run away if we find. She said, it seems to me like there are less girls than now. Anyway, some have been shot, some died. Well, so many women, you can't keep track of who's there, who isn't, unless they're close by, you know. So as we, one day, before we got our rations for bread, we got together, and we had made the plans at night, maybe what our names would be and what we would say to the people and so forth, that we would pose as Germans. And if there's an opportunity the next day, that we would try to run off. So as we gathered, we had a little rest, and as we gathered again, in rows of five, the two of us, my girlfriend, Carmen and I, ran into the woods. Nobody, thank God, saw us. And so we took scissors, and one of us had scissors, and we cut up these pieces of strap material so that the coat was free of the strap material. Each, we didn't want for each other. It was too cold to take the coats off, so we had to put coats on. And then we started singing German songs. There was a lot of chutzpah.
What did you do with the branches?
We threw them in a brook. It was a brook nearby. It wasn't frozen, so brooks usually aren't, I guess. And we sang songs and pretended that we were stopped by policemen, German policemen, who thought, aren't you the two girls? Aren't you girls from the Jewish group that went by? And my girlfriend made the attempt to look very surprised and very upset. How could he think that we would be two Jewish girls? And after that, we stayed with people overnight. And we told everybody that we had bombed out, that we were cousins. We changed our names to Erna and Paula Gruber. And I was Erna, she was Paula, we're cousins. And we went on our way, and we joined a troop of German refugees who went to the Sudetenland. So still while we were in Germany. So that means closer back to our place. My girlfriend was not from Prague, she was from a small town in Moravia.
Underneath your coats, did you have on?
You had clothing.
You
yes.
had regular clothing.
Regular clothing. Yes. There was no.
There
the
was
only
no
thing, only identification would have been a tattoo on our arm, which somebody would have had to pull our sleeves up and coat sleeves and whatever, because it was winter.
And there was never any challenge to that.
No,
there was never. So the German that you had learned in Prague, the
yes,
perfect German
that kind of helped us.
And I assume your friend's German was
yes,
equally
was good. Too. Yes.
So you were going towards the Sudetenland.
Yes.
Yes.
And we took jobs with some families. She was a butcher, and I was with a family with a child taking care of the children, and just for room and board. And we stayed there a few weeks, and all of a sudden a command came that the refugees, because we had gone with other German refugees, it just came on that day, will have to leave here. And this has to be a model made that to lead back into Germany. And we were devastated because we were closer to the border, now go back to Germany again. So we tried to explain to the authorities that we had some good German friends in Prague, in the Protectorate Prague, Czechoslovakia. It was called the Protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia. It was not Czechoslovakia anymore. And it's all you had to say, Czechoslovakia. They would have clowned us. So, well, they didn't have, yeah, sure, if you want to go there, go ahead. We don't care, just you have to get out of this area. So they gave us a pass, and we got some money from some people that we worked for. We had saved some money, we had some money somehow to go on train to Prague. Feelings were very mixed. We met all kinds of people in the train. We were only talking German. And we arrived in Prague, scared stiff. Somebody would see us. I mean, not her, but she was not from Prague, but me. And we finally got to my uncle's house. His wife was Dutch and they had stayed there. And my cousin, my girlfriend, cousin, I didn't dare to go in. There was a coffee shop nearby, so I stayed in the coffee shop and I told her to phone and say, your niece Irma is here. Yeah, and I had written them that we have ration cards from the Sudeten and that we are working and that Eva's daughter, no, Francis' daughter, Irma, here's Francis' daughter, Irma, something like that, so they know that it was Eva.
That you gave
that I gave myself another name.
You gave your mother's correct name.
Correct name, yes.
So that they would know
who
you were talking
about.
And
that you're doing fairly well. I couldn't say the aunt interned anymore. I just said, you know, we have ration cards and we're working. My girlfriend and I, my cousin and I. And yours are my group. I think I wrote that Francis would probably be proud of Irma or something like that. Yeah. So then my aunt said to come up to the house, to the apartment.
You were...
Carmen called. And my aunt said to both, for both of us to come up. So we went up and... they quickly put us into the apartment and they had the maid was there, I think, who had known me. And she said, oh, she looks like Eva. And my aunt said, no, this is a friend of mine. And it's been a few years since, you know, you can change. And I kept talking German all the time. And then she says, you know, she suspects something. You better go into the office. And they had a paper mill, they had an office. My uncle was still... I know, they still did some business, though the paper mill was taken away by the Germans. So he said for the office, to go to the office, which was on the third floor, so we went up to the same building, the third floor. And there my aunt talked to us, gave us money, she told me to dye my hair red, gave me some old glasses that were just glass, to look a little different, and gave us money for a hotel room. She wouldn't have dared to let us stay with her, and I wouldn't have asked her to, because I would have endangered them. Because this was still the war, it was March. It was a March or April, 45. And then I found a job with a woman whose husband was an SS-man, but he was at the front. She was Polish, and it was her child. Took care of the child, and Carmen found a job to somebody else.
You lived with the family?
Yes, I lived with the family.
When you were with your aunt and uncle, were you able to find out then what happened to any of the other members of your family?
No.
They hadn't heard?
They had not had anything. And I was in touch with on the phone a couple of times, but otherwise I never went to see them until after the war. I think there.
The two uncles that you mentioned who had married Christian wives, were both of them able to stay in Prague throughout the war?
Well, no. One of them was divorced. So he was in camps, Theresienstadt as well as also camps. And the other one was an aunt that had married a gentleman.
I see.
And they both went into camps. She to Theresienstadt for a few months, my aunt, and my uncle to a camp for the Gentile part. But the uncle was a Dutch wife, never went anywhere because he was working for the Jewish community council there. And they needed him there, so he never had to go anywhere. Luckily, they were the ones who sent us packages mostly because we were there till the end. Well, they couldn't send us pictures to Auschwitz, and they couldn't send me anything. I don't know if they sent me money once or not. I can't remember. I don't think they did.
So there was
because I would have wondered where it was coming from, you know.
But there was a separate camp for the Christian spouses.
Yes, there was.
Of the Jewish.
Yes.
People who were interned.
Yeah, I forgot what the name of it was, but I know the uncle went there. My aunt went to prison for a few months. It was just a few months.
And they were released?
Yes.
Both of them were released. Okay.
Liberated or whatever, I don't know. They're both not alive anymore now.
What was your...
Natural causes.
After the war.
Natural causes.
What was your experience then working with this family, the SS officer?
Well, it was very... strange, the woman had a baby, she was pregnant, and most likely by another man because her husband had been on the front so long. And when she had a nanny that was taking care of the baby, and the nanny was saying that she was kind of against me, she was Polish. The woman was also Polish originally, partly Polish, partly German. And she wasn't home very much. She must have had a boyfriend or something because she left the house and the child up to me and the nanny more or less. I took care of it. I raised him and I mended some of his clothing and tried hard to clean up. And then one fine day, it was toward the end of the war, she said, "Oh, by the way, you know, it's getting bad here now, and the war is coming to an end. You're not doing so good during the war, and I don't want to be caught here as a wife of an SS man. So you're my mate, you're going to have to go with me, but one day soon I'll let you know we'll go to Germany." And I was devastated. I said, boy, that's all I need. How long am I going to keep the show? Here I'm in Prague, and I said, well, ends, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I didn't say anything, I didn't say I wouldn't go, but I was pretty scared. And the 5th of May, she took off, as she had many a day, and she said, "I want you to do what you're supposed to, and Annie will help you, and I'll see you. You may come home tonight, I may not come home till tomorrow." And that was the day of the revolution. When the revolution started, a shooting going on across the street. There was a factory. And in the factory, they started pulling up the Czechoslovak flag. In the meantime, I had been the only iron. The lady I was working for, I don't remember her name, were the only Germans in the whole house. They were all Czechs. And they didn't know what happened. When I went for milk, they called the old lady and me all kinds of names, and I have to smile because I was talking German, and I have to hide that I know Czech. And it was like I was in an unwanted atmosphere there. But the superintendent, she seemed to like me, even though I was supposedly German. She seemed to say a few words to me once in a while, how she, woman treating you and so forth. I said, pretty good. And so she, that day, that day of the revolution, I finally made up my mind, and I saw them pulling the Czechoslovak flag up. It was a beautiful day, warm day. I opened the window and I said, what's going on in German? And they said, don't you know, the war is over, the war is over. So I said, now is my time. I had my packs, bags, read the paper and we saw that things are going to the end. So I had my packs, bags packed underneath my bed. I grabbed the two suitcases and I went down. And the nanny said to me, where are you going? And I said, I'm going out. She said, so the missus said, you're not allowed to go out. We're supposed to take over the baby. I said, I don't care what the missus says, I'm going out. So she takes a big key, locked the door, front door, and she unlocks the door. She locks the door for me. And I said, do you want me to scream for the police? And she somehow was afraid of the police, and she took the key out of her pocket, big pocket, apron, and she opens the door. I ran like the devil, chased me, and where did I go? Couldn't go outside, there was shooting going on out. So I went to the superintendent's. As I walked in, she said, oh, Anna, what are you doing here? And I said, Mrs. Koch. And I said, in Czech. She kind of looked strange. And I started talking in Czech. And she was sitting at the sewing machine, sewing the Czechoslovak flag together. Flag was different during the Republic as it was during when Hitler took over. Different, same colors but different, the triangle in there. And I said, what's going on? She says, well, at the end of the war. How come you speak Czech? I said, well, I am born here, I am Czechoslovakian, and my name is Eva Gerstl, and I had to put the charade on to save my life. I ran away from the concentration camp. And that's why I took the jobs and so forth. And they were hugging and kissing me. There was a lot of crying going on, a lot of tears. We sang the national anthem, all of us. And later on, the nanny came down, warm bottle for the baby. She couldn't take it in. She was too dumb to take anything in. And since she saw me there, she knew what was going on. And so then one woman, they started bringing me food, telling the whole house who I am. And they started bringing me food because I thought I had been hungry for so long, big slices of bread and butter. And they started to, one woman said that she didn't believe me, that I could be a German just hiding under this pretense. Would I have somebody, so the superintendent said, would you have somebody to identify you? I said, certainly, I have an uncle and aunt here. And I can do that over the phone, and I have a friend of my brother's, you know, this girl, that told you, my brother's girl, so a fun girl.
Did you identify yourself as a Jew?
Yes, I did. And they were really wonderful to me. I stayed there for a couple of days. In the meantime, my uncle, I called my uncle, and he said, yes, this is my niece Eva Gerstl, and she's been hiding, she's been in touch with me, but she was afraid to stay with us because it was too risky. And so I was identified for months, and then I called Greta, my girlfriend, my brother's former girlfriend. She identified me too, and she came to pick me up 2 or 3 days after that. So then I went to my uncle's house, the one I've been to this Carmen before. Yeah. And I stayed there for a little while. I stayed with my other aunt and uncle for a while.
Did you find any feeling about your Judaism staying with these Czech people in the house?
You mean
once you had identified yourself as a Jew?
No, there was no, they didn't care at all. Maybe they had even been anti-Semitic, but the fact that we all were fighting against the Germans and we're all Czechoslovak citizens, I kind of brought us together. Mm-hmm. So that's about the end.
This is Josie Fisher interviewing Eva Burns on February 10th, 1981. This is Tape 2, Side 2. As you look back over the time that you had in the camp, what do you think kept you going the second time? In the Theresienstadt, you had the music, you had your mother,
yes,
your father. What kept you going the second time around?
I think it was just the will of survival, will to survive this whole ordeal. And I think I would say the main factor was youth, the optimism of youth. It didn't permit any thoughts that you wouldn't survive unless you were killed or were very sick.
What did you see around you? in terms of other, the other young women, or the other women?
Well, there were, most of us were that way. There were some that were naturally depressed at times, and some that saw everything and will never live through this. And we had people like that too. And what we saw mostly was, this was known, this fact was known throughout all the camps, that the higher the intellect of the people were, not all of them, but many of them, let themselves go at first. They couldn't take it. They would not wash, they would not brush their teeth, they would deteriorate much faster.
The people with the higher intellect?
The highest intellect. They couldn't, they had the hardest time taking this.
And this was commonly felt throughout the
camps? It was common in all. Not just women, men.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know. I could never explain it to myself or anybody else.
But you saw this?
Yes, I saw this and I spoke to others about that, that it was known.
Did you spend much time thinking about what the possibilities of your own death were in the second camp?
No.
What did you do with the
thoughts? The only time I had wanted to end my own life was in Auschwitz, and that would have been running to the barbed wire because they were electrified, and ending it that way. But the will to survive and the will, I see my parents and my brother, and that it wouldn't be fair to them just because I had some hard times taking things, just to end my own life, kept me from that.
This was during the time you were in the barracks?
In Auschwitz, yes. Because that was the real desperation there. I found it the most desperate place.
How long actually were you in Auschwitz?
6 weeks.
6 weeks totally?
Yes. Yeah.
And during that, after that time, was the selection?
That was the selection. There was a camp. This was in sometime in July. 6 weeks would be May. Yeah, I probably went into July till February when we ran away. 45.
Were you aware of any kind of religious services or observance going on, either in Auschwitz or Christianstadt?
No, not there, but in Theresienstadt there was. Some people lit candles for Shabbos, they could, and there was some praying going on.
The people that you came across later did not observe? There was no discussion of religious observance?
No, there wasn't. There were many people who defied God, who said, how could there be a God when he'd let things like this happen? And there were many that didn't believe, and then until maybe they had married and had their own families, they began to believe in God again.
What happened to your own faith during that time?
I don't remember. I was never too religious. I really didn't become religious until I came. Even aware of being Jewish until after the war in Czechoslovakia and coming to this country. It made me a stronger Jew. It made me a person more aware and proud of being Jewish.
But
this experience.
After the experience.
Yes.
Did you have much of a physical recuperation after the experience on the march?
Well, I did have a problem. I had apparently not hadn't eaten well, and then I started eating well, better again. I got a few terrible attacks of gallbladder problems, which got worse, and I had to end a diet, and later on it didn't even help. In 1949 in Buffalo, New York, we came to to American 40, June 48, and in January 49, I had to have my gallbladder removed. And it was due to the fact that I didn't have enough food, and then all that rich food, just it must have built up during the years. Didn't agree with me.
To catch us back up, after the war was over, you stayed with your aunt and uncle?
I stayed with my aunt, one of my aunts and uncles, and I met my now husband at the time, friend, and we started going out together, and 2.5 years later we were married in Czechoslovakia.
During that time you were living with the aunt and uncle?
Yes, I was living with the aunt and uncle, then I was living in a rooming house, with in a boarding house, renting a room with one of my former girlfriend's mother's, whose daughter meanwhile was married. So that she didn't live with her, and she had a room up to rent, so that's where I lived until I got married.
What did you learn of your family's whereabouts after the war?
I didn't know anything about my mother other than when she left. However,
when she left?
We found out when they left Theresienstadt. That was in October 45, both of them left.
They left together?
Yeah. I don't know the same transport, but they left the same month. And my father, I found out about a year after the war was over, I had a note that I had been on vacation, and my landlady left me a note, this man here who wants to get in touch with you. And I was to either call him or see him. He was in camp with your father. And he was at the Jewish community, service, and he found out that somebody returned from the family, so he was his daughter. So I saw that man, he was not Jewish, he was in camp with my father, and he told me that my father worked in camp and he worked out of camp, and when he came home...
Auschwitz?
No, one of the camps, I don't remember which camp it was. When he came home, this man's name was Tony. And Tony came home one day, my father, they became good friends because he was a metaphysicologist. My father was always interested in handwriting analysis and things like that. And when he came home, he found out that my father was beside himself, happy. He said, what's in my life happened for? He said, well, while you were at work, we were called up and we were told that whoever is Jewish should raise their hand, and because the Swiss Red Cross is here and wants to take them to Switzerland. So Tony said to my father, you raised your hand? And he said, yes. And all of us did. In other words, apparently in that particular camp, which was unusual because usually Jews and non-Jews were marked, political prisoners, etc., as we saw in the movie Holocaust. But apparently at that time, they didn't know who was Jewish and who wasn't in that particular camp. And this is a way to find out. It was a trick. It was over again. I was very upset, of course, even though it was a year to the war. There wasn't much chance that anybody would be alive, but you kind of hope maybe somebody would be alive, but not under these conditions.
He doesn't know what happened.
No, he doesn't know what happened, but it was a trick to get them to Auschwitz or someplace.
Did you ever hear what happened to your mother?
No, just that she went to the transport and never returned.
But you still had hopes?
I had hopes, yes. I had hopes
that they would turn
that maybe there'll be some place, or maybe there'll be some...
When did you give up hoping to see your mother?
Well, 2 or 3 years after that, I guess. It wasn't very likely that they would be alive.
Did you hear many different stories from other family members who had been in different camps? Anything that you could share with us?
No.
What their life experience had been.
No, I didn't know really too much. I didn't know some, but I mean, they would be better if they told it to you.
Your husband Was he in a camp?
He was in about 6 or 7 camps. Started with Lodge, and I don't remember the names.
And you married in Prague?
I married in Prague in November 20th, 1947, same day as Queen Elizabeth.
And then when did you come to the United States?
We came here in June 1948.
Is there anything else that you can think of that we haven't covered or that you've thought of after we've talked about it that you'd like to add to our discussion?
No, I can think of anything else that we've covered quite a bit.
Okay. Thank you very much.